Okay, I want to welcome you to the May 2nd meeting of the House Committee on Healthcare, and I see we have the illustrious Senator Bonus Anderson with us today. So we will start with Senate Bill 879, assuming you have someplace else to be other than here.
That's right. I was just, good afternoon,
Co-chair. Excuse me. I need to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 879 before you're allowed to speak.
Thank you, Co-Chair Thompson and members of the committee. I'm Senator Lori Monis Anderson, and I represent Gresham Troutdale Village in Fairview, and I'm here to testify on Senate Bill 879. Your illustrious co-chair, Greenlick, is testifying on some bills in my committee, and so as soon as I'm done, maybe we'll switch places. Basically, what 879 does, it'll direct the Oregon Health Authority to convene a stakeholder group that's going to work on recommendations for standardizing some administrative requirements that health profession students have to meet in order to do clinical rotations. And some of those things are like criminal background checks, drug screening, HIPAA orientation, and basic safety precautions. And we have our clinical rotations at various sites, and for each institution, for a student to have to go through these requirements at each separate institution is just very redundant, confusing, and also very costly for the students. So I think that this is a very good idea. The other thing that it will do is also have rules determine clinical placement for all these different places. The Oregon Center for Nursing owns clinical placement software, and it's being used in conjunction with voluntary standardization by several other states. And we do have various schools of nursing competing for clinical sites, and it's really important to have a coordinated effort. So I feel that this is a very good bill, and I think you'll have some people who are much more knowledgeable about this than I am. But I urge your support. Thank you.
Any questions for Senator Morris Anderson?
Thank you. And I hear that maybe there is some bills that didn't get through this committee that might be turning up in various bills that have already passed.
Is that a warning or a threat?
It's your bills that didn't get through.
And we thank you.
Thank you so much for that.
You never know where bills turn up in this world. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Okay, I think we'll continue this hearing. And we have to have Dr. Janine Smith and Mary Rita Hurley. While they're coming up, I probably should explain. You're going to see people in and out of here today if you're not familiar with the committee system, because we have a number of people that are testifying in up to two other committees besides serving on this one, as Senator Morris Anderson was here from a committee that she's a part of. So people are rotating rapidly through. We've done everything except bring people in off the street to fill chairs. So you're going to see a rotating attendance today, and we'll do the best we can on maintaining a quorum. Please state your name, and you know the drill.
Yes. Chair Thompson, members of the committee, my name is Janine Smith. I'm the administrator for the Office of Health Policy and Research in the Health Authority, and testifying on 879. And this, as Senator Monis Anderson just laid out, what the essence of this bill does is try to, in some ways, it's sort of administrative simplification for getting folks trained. And it's broader than just nurses, but it is also across a lot of our workforce. This bill originated from the Health Policy Board's action plan, and it was one of the recommendations of the Policy Board's Workforce Committee. And it was really felt to be a vital way to try to reduce the administrative burden and expense and increase the capacity for clinical training in the state. There are some regrets from a couple of folks who were able to, that helped us think through how to best do this bill on the Senate side, and they have I think, submitted some written testimony, Ann Barr from Pacific University, and Ann Malosh, who was the vice chair of the Workforce Committee, and you should have received those. But this really does, as Senator Mona Anderson suggested, help people go through the loop. So if you're going to go do a rotation in Legacy 1 month, there may be some different requirements than if you go over and have to do a rotation at Peace Health down in Eugene. And so how can you kind of have sort of a uniform way in which to get all those qualifications sorted out and sorted through? The nurses have sort of set a nice approach to this, and we'd like to spread it across medical students and other healthcare workers. And I think there was a lot of work to try to get the right language and the right mix, but basically it sets up a work group that would be in partnership with the Workforce Committee, which you all created in House Bill 2009 to be sort of the center for this kind of thinking. And so we really want to encourage you to go with Senate Bill 879, as we really think we can include all of the multiple stakeholders into that work group to come up with a good way and means in which to get this going and use existing resources as best we can to facilitate it.
Now I will turn it over to you.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Thompson and members of the committee. My name is Mary Rita Hurley, and I'm the new executive director for the Oregon Center for Nursing, and I'm here to provide information related to Senate Bill 879. The Oregon Center for Nursing is an organization that actively brings together nursing leaders to find solutions to problems affecting the nursing workforce. One of these solutions currently operated by the Oregon Center for Nursing is StudentMax, which is a web-based software program used to coordinate clinical placements for nursings. StudentMax was developed by Portland and Southwest Washington nursing leaders back in 2003 as a response to efforts to increase capacity of nursing programs. StudentMax helps nursing programs and clinical providers keep up with the increased demand for student clinical experiences. StudentMax encourages these educators and providers to improve their communication and collaborate to further develop the clinical placement experience for students. This program has proven to be very successful in Oregon and now is licensed for use in 13 locations nationwide. In 2006, StudentMax users in Oregon recognized a need to standardize the requirements of different clinical sites to make the clinical placement process more efficient for students and the faculty that supervise them. The result of this work is a passport, a card-sized form, which students carry with them to track their prerequisite requirements that are needed before they can participate in clinical experiences. The passport tracks information such as immunizations, drug screens, and background checks. The process of creating this passport has taken 4 years and the effort of many people from the StudentMax partnership. The group worked with every clinical facility's legal and medical departments to help them come to consensus. Some requirements such as immunizations are easy to agree upon, and others such as bloodborne pathogen training are harder to agree upon because of system-specific constraints. Having the passport makes clinical placements more efficient for clinical sites, students, and faculty. It helps to have all the information in one place. However, it also fulfills requirements from the Joint Commission, an independent accreditation and certification organization. The Joint Commission requires clinical prerequisites to be immediately available when requested. So this passport allows for instant confirmation that the prerequisites have been fulfilled. Our experience with Passport has shown that the process of developing a standard set of prerequisites for clinical experience is an ongoing dialogue which must be revisited when hospitals and other clinical sites change their standards. However, many clinical sites are willing to engage in this discussion because of the increased efficiency the Passport provides. Thank you for this opportunity to testify today, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions?
No. Very good. Okay.
Thank you very much. Perfect testimony. Actually, I missed most of
it. We'll fill you in later.
Good. Are there any other witnesses that want to testify in this bill? We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 107A. No, I'm sorry. Wait a minute. Which one?
879.
Senate Bill 879. Ah, yes. That was because of Senator Mona Anderson. Should we move?
Are you okay going into a work session?
Yeah, let's do it.
Open up a work session on Senate Bill 879. Mr. Co-Chair?
Co-Chair Greenlink, I move that we move Senate Bill 879 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Thompson moves Senate Bill 879 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is that a
No discussion. Okay. It's good. It's a great idea.
Okay.
It really streamlines things.
Would you call the roll, please?
Representative Gordy?
Yes.
Representative Boyle?
Aye.
Representative Boyle?
Aye.
Representative
White? Excused.
Vice Chair
Cannon? Excused. Vice Chair Cannon?
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Greenwood? Aye. Motion passes. 879 moves to the floor.
I need a carrier. Want to put it on the agenda?
You have a motion.
It was unanimous on the other side as well.
Unanimous out of the Senate?
Correct.
Yeah. Consent calendar.
Any objection?
Any objection? I didn't want any objections. Close the work session on Senate Bill 879. Should we go to one of the... Let's open a public hearing on Senate Bill 107.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 107 comes to you from the Senate floor with 25 ayes, 4 noes. The bill clarifies that the Oregon Health Authority may release information from the immunization registry and tracking and recall system for the purposes of outreach to clients who have missed public health interventions and for purposes of public health assessment and evaluation, declares an emergency effective on passage. There's no revenue or fiscal impact on the bill, Mr. Chair.
How'd this bill do in the Senate? Do you have that?
There were 25 ayes and 4 noes.
Okay.
And here's your signed sheet.
Ms. Bradley and Dr. Sislak.
Chair Greenlink, Thompson, and members of the committee, thank you very much. My name is Catherine Bradley. I'm administrator for the Office of Family Health in the Public Health Division, and I'm here today to ask your support for Senate Bill 107A. The Alert Immunization Information System is a statewide population registry that tracks immunizations provided for individuals throughout their lifespan in Oregon. It is a mature and well-populated registry that was originally written in and developed in 1993. The original statute in 1993 only allowed contact information for two purposes within the registry. The first was to improve an individual's immunization status, and the second was the ability to notify a parent or guardian that their child might be late. So those two reasons have been what have driven the contact information. Since then, as you know, we have had HIPAA come into play in the hospital side, and the data and security systems, you know, have matured from where we were in the early 90s. The need for evaluation for population health has also grown, and we have run into several highly problematic areas for the division that have brought us to this place today of asking for this bill. This bill would allow ALERT to address limited additional public health purposes, and we have those four purposes outlined for which we would write rules. The first is for assessment and evaluation related to diseases within a local public health jurisdiction. Specifically, what happens right now and what happened in this case is that we had a county during H1N1 that requested information about all their county data. However, in their county, and as is typical across the state, 80% of the population receives immunizations from private providers. The way the rules are written, the county could only have information about those immunizations the county had administered, not about the private providers. So their ability to assess the impact or the vaccine status across their county was something we could not support doing. Number two is use for immunization information with the PRAMS registry, and this is our pregnancy risk assessment monitoring system. We do this twice, one as a survey immediately after pregnancy and a second follow-up at 2 years of age. It's dependent on accurate address information. We do have address from birth contact information, which gives us some information at birth, but for the two-year-olds, we need to have more updated information. Third is public health surveillance and evaluation, which Dr. Cieslak is going to speak to, that offers for better case control and assessment. And fourth is the outreach for clients under our hearing-led screening program, and we have some additional advocacy information that is going to come forward on that. So these four areas are the ones that we would be writing rules on, and we would work with the Immunization Public Policy Advisory Team, IPAT, and registered users in a very public process. We have a solid track record with the Alert Registry in protecting the security of the registry data, and do believe that this is critical for public health interventions in the future. Thank you very much for allowing me to testify, and if you have any further questions, I'm available, and so is the staff. Thank you.
Are there any questions, Ms. Bradley? Paul?
While we're waiting, we're also going to have Ms. Ortonakis join us as well.
Co-Chair Greenlick, Co-Chair Thompson, and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dr. Paul Cieslak. I'm the medical director of the Oregon Immunization Program and manager of the communicable disease section within the public health division. We have two purposes for which we'd like to access alert data. First of all is during routine case investigations. If, for example, we get a case of measles that comes to our attention, we want to know, first of all, is the patient vaccinated or not? But secondly, we want to know, are the potentially exposed persons vaccinated or not? Have the family members had two doses of measles vaccine? In the case of measles, there may have been a visit to the doctor's office, and the physician can tell us who else was in the waiting room, and we have a desire to know about whether they're susceptible by virtue of lack of vaccination or not. So it's around the reportable disease cases that applies. The second purpose for which we'd like it is a little bit broader, but it's to find out whether, in general, the vaccine is having the desired effect. We want to know whether cases are occurring because of lack of vaccination or whether they're occurring despite vaccination. And in the case of some diseases, whether or not there is so-called replacement phenomenon. With the pneumococcus, for example, we can prevent now 13 different types of pneumococcus. Are we seeing the other types coming up to take their place? So throughout the population, are the decreases in disease commensurate with the vaccination rates that we're seeing? So it's a broader look at, is the vaccine doing what it's supposed to be doing?
Thank you. So there were four votes against this on the other side. Do you know what the concern was? Did they bring that up in committee, or did that come up on the Senate floor? Or?
I'm not aware of Co-Chair Greenlee, Co-Chair Thompson, Representative Parrish. I'm not aware of what the causes for those were.
Co-Chair Thompson?
This is a little broader question, but it has to do with moving into this arena. As we move toward universal electronic healthcare records, are we going to have some kind of an agreed platform for access for all healthcare workers? It seems like we keep having these discussions about who can get into certain kinds of information but not other kinds of information, and we're kind of siloing the access. And it seems like that's going to get us in trouble with electronic healthcare records, where we may actually have some community healthcare workers who are not physicians or nurses who may need to have that access in conjunction with the jobs they're performing. Do you see access as being something we can level load, or will we continue to work with these little pieces here and there?
Co-Chairs Greenlick and Thompson, thank you very much. That's an excellent question. And it is one that you'll find the immunization registry work is very involved in the health information technology work that's going forward in the health information exchange. We actually have two primary areas right now in public health, one in surveillance monitoring and one in immunizations, that as we're building towards this new system, they are a part of the system and we begin to move out of the silos. We do actually have access to the immunization registry right now, which is considered to be a role-based access, and there's a format to that. So, for example, child care providers in certain settings, schools, other providers, not just physicians actually can access the registry, again, dependent on their role and the setting. But the future of where we're going is clearly more towards an integrated systems approach, and the immunizations registry will be part of that as well. This is kind of a part of our intermediate transition step, I think, as we are continuing to move forward.
Thank you.
If I could just add, I also think that the work on the immunization registry is going to help further that other work, because this this may be the best example of a system in the state that's actually making it happen, whereas everybody's sort of talking about doing it on a broad scale. But in this case, it really is happening with Health Level 7 information record-based exchange of data.
Thank you.
Mr. Greenland.
Yes.
And I guess this kind of follows the same questions. In the summary that they have here, it says that the same secure confidential protocols currently in place within ALERT would be used. And have there been breaches? Are you comfortable with the sort of protocols that have been set up?
Chair Greenlink and Representative Doherty, yes, actually, we've been extremely careful with the ALERT registry, because it is been predominantly a registry that has maintained children's data and information. It's now expanded to a lifespan registry, but the inherent protections that we've got around that are very significant. We have not had a breach that has been problematic, and the intent is that we would continue to recognize that this is a very valuable, and while we want to do some very limited and specific public health linkages with it, that it is not something that we take lightly and that we will continue to be very careful about.
Thank you.
Okay. My name is Dolores Orphanakis, and
thank you. It's an F and not a T. Huh?
Yes, my Greek husband's responsible. Greek background husband is responsible for that. Thank you for allowing me to appear today in support of Senate Bill 107. I've also submitted a written testimony from a parent of a hearing impaired child. She was unable to attend today. In 2000, our Oregon legislature mandated universal newborn hearing screen in all of our hospitals in the state with greater than 200 births. And subsequently, the legislature mandated that a follow-up and tracking system be developed, and that a yearly report be made to the legislature. And we're here to support Senate Bill 107 because it's been identified in some areas that it's difficult to do our job. Early hearing detection and intervention requires that the infants be screened within the hospital in the first 30 days of life, that then they go on to a formal audiological diagnosis by 3 months of age, and that they receive intervention by 6 months if this is to be an effective program. However, currently, 40% of the infants who do not pass the hospital screening, so this is almost half of the kids in Oregon born each year who would have hearing loss, do not go on to the diagnosis and intervention. And there are a number of reasons for that. But this really makes screening and all the effort and time put to it a wasted effort. You'll say, why don't you just look at the physician's name who's in the hospital? But what we're finding nationally and locally, that more than half the time, the physician who cared for the baby in the hospital is not the physician who cares for the baby after discharge. Senate Bill 107 would allow the EDDI program to identify who is the current physician, because infants typically go for immunizations, and therefore the most current physician is identified through the immunization record. Unlike immunizations, there really isn't catch-up when kids have hearing loss. So if we don't intervene with these kids by 6 months of age, they do not achieve their potential, and in many cases may have to go on to something like the state school for the deaf, where the expense is very high and they're not allowed to really live with their parents for a good part of their life. So appropriate diagnosis and intervention is critical. Furthermore, I think what's really sort of great about this program, and I was involved earlier with the immunization alert, it provides a model where state agencies like metabolic screening, hearing screening, immunizations, may in the past have operated in an isolated format. They're coming together now and operating with private pediatricians like myself to promote and provide optimal outcome in children. And actually, even though the statement said it wouldn't have a implication for cost. It actually decreases cost when you have combined programs, makes it much easier for the physicians, but most importantly, it really improves the outcome of our children. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you all very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I'm going to close public hearing on Senate Bill 107. But hang around. We'll have a work session on it in a bit. And I'm going to open a work session on SCR 11A and ask Senator Winters to join us.
Good afternoon. For the record, I'm State Senator Jackie Winters, representing District 10, which includes South Salem, West Salem, Almsville, Turner, Monmouth, and Independence. And that was a marathon race from down in LFO to get here to speak with you this afternoon, Co-Chair Greenlake, to talk on behalf of the resolution honoring Dr. David Shaw. And it's kind of interesting because I've been asked a lot about this very colorful cast that I have on my wrist, and Dr. Shaw is the physician who has put me in restraints so that I'm not waving this hand too much or not able to backhand somebody. So
makes it safer to be near you.
Makes it safer. Let me tell you one of my reasons for wanting to honor Dr. Shaw. You know, in our life, and I've decided that, you know, we often honor individuals after their death. And I've had the pleasure and opportunity to meet some incredible individuals who have given extraordinary service, not only in this community, but international as well. And Dr. Shaw is one of those individuals. I first met Dr. Shaw in 1986. Where I had the unfortunate incident to have to develop, not by him but somebody else, staph infection, and it was very, very serious. Those of you who see my arm that has this big cut, and it was Dr. Shaw who actually became the treating physician. And that's how our paths crossed, and he's been in my life ever since. Whether it's in community involvement, where he gives an enormous amount of his time to this community, or whether he's taking on mission trips, individuals from this community, nurses and other physicians, to go to Ecuador and Peru to actually treat those individuals who do not have access to medical care. Particularly when we talk about the issue of orthopedics and orthopedic surgery. He does this at his own expense. He's very humbled by it. If you ask him, and I remember when I visited to him, I asked him if I could help in any way to raise money, and he just shook his head and said, or if we could get involved in this building. And he said, no. I prefer to just to continue to do what we're doing. In fact, he just came back. He came back this week where he was treating me. He went to treat two children, and he ended up treating seven. His trip before that, I said, you know, how did that trip go? And he said, you know, it was interesting. And he's used to providing his service and the service of other Salemites from this county who go. He said, you know, this time I treated a young man. The young man had this huge growth on his femur. Was not able to neither lie or sit. And it's been there for years. And when he completed the surgery, like he does, he goes on to the next one. And he said, you know, the next day, the mother of this young man came and gave me 6 years of court. Which was all that she had. And he was so humbled by it. And so I said, you know, it's this individual that we need to say thank you for his contribution, not only to what he does here in our state, but he's taken his passion abroad internationally. I talked to him this morning because he has some ideas. He knows that I'm involved with the whole diabetes and obesity initiative. And of course, you can't be in orthopedic surgery in that field without knowing about that particular issue and whether or not we're doing what we need to do to prevent the amputation of limbs. And so he wants to talk to me further about what we can do. And so I ask you to just give a unanimous aye and help me honor Dr. David Shaw.
Thank you. Any questions? Who's his representative?
His representative is, I believe, Cameron.
We'll ask him to carry the bill.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for coming.
You're welcome.
Let's go. Oh, we have a work session. How about a motion?
Chair Greenlick, I move that SCR 11A be adopted.
We move to the floor with a.
Be adopted,
right.
Yeah.
Representative Thompson moves Senate Concurrent Resolution 11A to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Mm-mm. Would you please call the roll?
Yes.
Representative Harris?
Yes.
Representative Boyle?
Aye.
Representative Weiser?
Excused.
The Vice Chair Cannon?
Aye.
The Vice Chair Cameron?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Motion passed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for bringing it.
Yeah.
And we'll.
I'll check with
Representative Cameron and see if he'd like to carry it.
So, Senator, what did he do with the corn?
You know, I didn't ask him. He when he came in, he shared that with me on the Senate floor. You just have to. The individual was so humbled by the gift.
Yeah.
The other thing, he's so appreciative of what we do in this building. It's kind of interesting because I think sometimes we take for granted our own role and our own contribution, and we have somebody from the outside who comes and sat with me on the floor, and he's just so appreciative. I told him his demeanor and the way he carries and his compassion and what he does reminds me a lot of Mahatma Gandhi.
Hmm. Wow. Thank you. Okay. Close the public hearing on the work session on SCR 11A and open a work session on Senate Bill 107A. We have a motion.
Chair Greenlick, I move Senate Bill 107A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Thompson moves Senate Bill 107A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Please call the roll.
Representative
Jordy?
Yes.
Representative Harris?
Yes.
Representative Boyle? Aye. Representative
Weiser?
Excuse.
Vice Chair Cannon?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kenmer?
Aye.
Co-Chair Thompson?
Aye.
Co-Chair Greenlee?
Aye.
Okay.
Motion carries. Who?
I'll do it.
Representative Kenmer will carry it. Let's open a work session on Senate Bill 104. Madam Chair? Madam Administrator?
Thank you.
Whoever you are.
That's right. The one sitting next to you. Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 104 had a public hearing on the 27th, last Wednesday. This was a multi-level layer bill that came to us from the Health Authority. It aligns current statutes with the CHIP program and FEOP. It authorizes, it changes and defines family by administrative rule for consistency purposes. It also allows FEOP to pay subsidies for dental plans. There are multiple layers. Did you want me to go through all of them? Does this jog your memory?
You might roughly go through them. Yeah,
okay.
Quickly.
It allows the program to clarify by rule specific recovery guidelines for subsidy overpayments and better aligns with the current authority programs. It also adds the Office of Private Health Partnerships into the bill, granting them authority to contract for or certify both individual and group health benefit plans, approve the premium rates of the programs and the subsidies, establish employer premium contribution levels. It also deletes obsolete language that related to special small employer health benefit plans that sunsetted back in 2008. The Oregon Medical Insurance Pool, it restores one of the board positions that was inadvertently removed when we brought on the health authority. And it also adds the director of the health authority to the board, allows the board to extend the current third-party administrator contract so it ends with the federal reforms are scheduled to take effect in January 2014. It also allows OMIP to continue covering individuals who have Medicare Part A but are not eligible to receive Part B or D until they are enrolled in the B and D programs.
That's enough.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
There
are folks in the audience to answer any questions, if anybody has any.
Great.
If not, are we ready for a motion? Mr. Kocher?
Kocher Greenlick, I move Senate Bill 104 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Thompson moves Senate Bill 104 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Please call the roll.
Representative Gordy?
Yes.
Representative Parrish?
Yes.
Senate Bill 104. The motion passes. Senate Bill 104 is on the way to the floor. Is somebody willing to carry it? Representative Thompson. Great. Representative Thompson carries. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 104. Can I have a motion to suspend the minutes to allow Representative Cannon to vote on Senate Bill 879, please?
So moved.
Any objection? Motion passes. Representative Cannon?
I vote aye.
Representative Cannon votes aye.
Is Widener coming?
He said he would be coming, but he had two committees to testify in, so he's not coming yet.
Do you know where he is?
I do not.
He was in rules behind me. But I don't know. There were a bunch of folks down there.
Could we stand at ease for a moment and see if we can get Representative? and ask for a motion to suspend the rules to allow Representative Weidler to vote on four bills.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Any objection? Okay. Do I have to open up work sessions on them?
No, you can just go down each bill.
The suspension rule.
Right.
Representative Weidner, how do you vote on Senate Bill 107A?
Aye.
On Senate Bill 879?
Aye.
On SCR 11A?
Aye.
And on Senate Bill 104?
Aye.
We're adjourned.
Good choice.
Now, is everybody going to give...